Welcome to Loading the Bar with physical training experts Parker McBride and Matt Wasko. Our Fit Lifestyle podcast covers the science of nutrition and fitness, together with the challenges we all face to be disciplined. We'll guide you through the minefields of fads and gimmicks and all manner of BS that tempt us in today's fitness world. Ready to begin? Then let's start loading the bar.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Loading Bar Podcast. Parker and Matt here, riding solo today, just us two. Last week, we had a fantastic couple of guests on, Dr. Shelley Alexander and Brian Keller returning as well. That was a great episode. If you haven't listened to that episode, definitely want to catch that because learned a ton of stuff and had a lot more we could have learned. We could have went on for hours.
Oh, 100%.
That one.
Yeah, I had questions in the tank. That I probably scratched the surface of all the questions I wanted to ask her. And, you know, it's always good to have someone on that pushes our education.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
No, we learned a lot
of
stuff.
And, you know, I mean, and again, you know, she challenged some of my perceptions of things.
Mine too.
You know, I have this, my view on fiber is not like hers. You know, I have some, and again, you know, these are just varying opinions. You know, the best thing you can do out there is first get off processed foods and you're halfway there. But, you know, as far as absorbing nutrients and stuff like that, you know, Dr. Alexander was a proponent of fiber and adding, vegetables to your diet. And so, you know, that's something for people to consider, but you know, it makes me want to ask her more questions.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And you know, my main thought on it, I love, you know, being here, just me and you, mm-hmm. and talking about the things we believe, but I also like the fact that part of what this podcast does is it is a way for us to get other people's perspectives and other people's knowledge to our listeners and out to the public, right? She had never done a podcast before.
Right.
And so this was her first opportunity to, you know, broadcast her knowledge to anybody who wants to listen, essentially. Yeah. Anybody who wants to tune into the podcast. And so I like the idea of having a platform that people can come share their knowledge and get it out to people, and that we can provide that to people, because me and Matt don't know everything.
No.
We like to think we do, but the reality is we don't.
We try to practice humility. You know, what's funny about it is, let's say that it's 150 years earlier than now, and with some reason we do have this equipment. You know, and 150 years earlier,
we would be the number one podcast.
The number one podcast, and only no one would be listening to us. There's no radios, and there's no electronic devices or no phones. But, you know, let's say we're trying to preach to the masses, they're already eating healthy. There's no need for information like this. Okay, because it was part of life. It was part of the natural consequences of living on a farm, raising your own food. There was no processing. Everyone killed and raised and grew their own food. And so these questions weren't really necessary to answer, right? And, you know, Dr. Alexander wouldn't have a job because not everyone's testosterone and estrogen wouldn't be messed up like they are now. Yes, modern science has brought us some ability to live longer life, but is it quality of life, right? I think there's this weird dichotomy that has gone on, and that is our average age span is living longer, but, you know, those last, and I think Dr. Alexander talked about this, those last 10 years, are they the way you want to be living? And the answer to that is no. So medicines that keep you alive, let's say we didn't have those medicines and we were just to eat the processed foods that everyone is forced to, you know, to eat these days because, you know, they don't, have the wherewithal to grow their own foods or, you know, go to the farmer's market or even understand that they need to, I think the lifespan would be shorter. You know, if we didn't have the ability for these medicines to keep the heart running, even though it's not a quality of life.
It's kind of like we created a problem and then we're trying to find solutions to the problem. But if we just never created the problem in the first place, we would need no need for the solutions.
100%.
So these medications that help mask certain symptoms that are brought upon by changes that we should have never made.
Yes, 100%. Yeah.
And so that's a lot of it is just a lot of our perspective. There's no fancy new technologies, new drugs, you know, earth-shattering, new developments. Like, this is just going back to the way things used to be.
It's almost right like way. We need to be called, rename our podcast, The Crusaders, because we're trying to get back to what, how it's supposed to be, right?
Hey.
We're fighting what, what we've done to ourselves, really. Mm-hmm. And, this was just thinking, as we started talking, and I'm just thinking, 150 years ago, be no need for this podcast. I mean, granted, there was no podcast, but.
Yeah, we're having to tell people that eggs are actually healthy for them on this podcast because people don't know that anymore. But 150 years ago, you tell someone, hey, eggs are actually healthy for you. They say, I know. I go out back to my chickens every day and get some eggs and eat them. I know they're healthy.
And these weren't even questions that were posed, right? I mean, it wasn't thought about, right? And it's only because the health is so bad right now that it's raised questions like, oh, we have to actually rediscover why people lived and eaten the way they have for thousands of years. And it's just a weird time, you know? I mean, I think a couple shows back we were talking about how, you know, you have grocery stores, and really grocery stores are kind of an unnatural thing because food is meant to be grown and eaten almost immediately, right? There's not this time that it sits and on shelves. And
it's not interregional.
Yes, either. 100%, right? I mean, we have fruits and probably some vegetables here that just can't be grown here.
But we also have fruits and vegetables that can be grown here that then you go to the grocery store and it's from many countries away. You go to the grocery store and the strawberries are product of Mexico. Well, you can grow strawberries here, right?
Yeah.
Or your, you know, meat that's product of Brazil or, you know, Australia. And it's like we can and do grow all this stuff here. Why is what I'm buying in the grocery store come from other countries? You wouldn't think it would make logical sense to do that.
Well, and I also think, you know, reality we can run away from reality as far as we want, right? And I think that's kind of what's happened in the food industry. But the things that bind reality cannot be changed. Reality cannot be changed, right? We can't change the fact what's good for the body. Our body responds to certain nutrients in certain ways, and we introduce chemicals that aren't. It's kind of like putting sand in a gas tank, right? You know, that's not meant to work that way, you know, because of the natural law of things. So, you know, so when you fight against reality, you create untenable situations. They can't go on forever, right? You start seeing negative response, and we have, starting probably in the 30s and 40s, you know, we have, 80 some years of nutrition going in the wrong direction, trying to all in the sake of let's get the food to them faster, right? And now it's like if we continually try to fight against reality of how food was intended, it's only going to get worse. And so, and more unhealthy. I mean, the result is that we're more unhealthy, and right now, the United States has an obesity problem. So, even with 30% of the population that goes to the gym, but I guess what I'm trying to say is that ultimately reality is going to win. There's no other two ways. So, the sooner we embrace it and go back to the way it was intended. With all the great innovations we have now, a lot of the things that innovations and modernizations we can use to, can we can help us to grow our own food, right? So I just think this is, it's kind of after that, the our last episode with Dr. Alexander, it just kind of made me realize, like, what's the 10,000 foot view of what's going on? And that's kind of what's dawned on me. We're just fighting against reality of how things are supposed to be.
Yeah. I mean, think about where we're sitting right now doing this podcast. We're in a gym. Yeah. You mentioned doing this podcast 150 years ago. Would we have been able to do it in a gym 150 years ago?
No gyms.
Gyms didn't exist. Gyms didn't exist till probably, what, 50 years ago?
Yeah.
And even then, they just started out being for, like, bodybuilders. You know, yes. You think of, like, Arnold Schwarzenegger in those days, you know, the big Gold's Gym. Like, people just went to the gym if they wanted to be bodybuilders and get abnormally large muscles. You didn't see people that went to the gym because they said, man, my health is in such a bad shape that I've got to figure out something to do about it. I've got to figure out a way to get exercise and start moving. That was more of a recent development because of the obesity problem, because of the health problems that we have. People want to go to the gym. And luckily, you know, because of that, we kind of have found this, we've been a part of multiple of them now, but community aspect within gyms that are promoting positive health. Right? Because if you come here, yes, you have equipment to use and treadmills to walk on and stuff, but you also meet other people who have a health mindset. And because of that, it can kind of help you learn how to actually be healthy. I think that's one of the main benefits of having these gyms nowadays, is it is an unfortunate development that we need to have gyms, because people used to be healthy enough that they didn't. And they were active enough and healthy enough that they didn't need a gym. Yeah. But now that we do, it's almost like helping create these small communities of people who are getting back to the healthy ways. Maybe we don't, you know, do the type of physical labor that we used to do 50, 100 years ago, raise our own food and stuff. But then as a result of that, we have a community that we come into at a gym and push ourselves physically still to mimic that.
Yeah.
Or we talk to people at a gym and we figure out different sources for quality food and that we wouldn't have known about otherwise.
Right.
And, you know, we can talk to each other about different natural remedies and treatments and things. And so it's kind of a cool development of helping us get ourselves back to that reality a little bit. And I think the gym and health-focused communities help that a lot.
It is interesting because gym, if you think about it, and me and Parker work in a gym, so, you know, but gyms are a result of the job market changing, right? Mm-hmm. People use their backs all the time, you know, when they did their job. There's a lot of pulling. You work the farm, you work your food, and you know, you're handling your livestock, or if you were a woodsmith or metalsmith, there was a lot of physical activity. If you ran a horse's stable, I mean, all these things took, you had to have a decent level of physical activity.
And it would keep you in shape 100%. To do that every day.
Yeah. So, you know, and so, you know, it just kind of makes, and so then we remove that component, right? A lot of people, their jobs are sitting. And so the body responds negatively to that, right? That's why that's the advent of gym. So you're 100% right. And then on top of that, what's happened to our food? So it's kind of like the double whammy, right? All these modern innovations have not benefited the human body. Or we haven't utilized them the way they should have been utilized to benefit us. They are to streamline the ability to get food to us faster for what? Money. And, you know, so it's a rabbit hole that you could go down, you know, a ways, you know, and kind of like, I don't know, it poses a lot of moral and ethical questions.
Yeah, we have, as a society, kind of untethered the relationship between food and health. And I think that's a little bit of the problem is, you know, food used to exist in its rawest and most natural form. You know, you talked about 150 years ago. There was meat, but it was just meat, right? You'd slaughter a cow and you'd have the meat. There was eggs from your chickens. There was milk straight from the cow. You know, there was fruits and vegetables that you harvested out of your garden. There wasn't, now those foods were, they tasted good and they were satisfying, right? There was bread with natural ingredients and they tasted good, and but they were healthy for you. And you kind of thought about food as a sustaining your life. That's what the purpose of food really is. It's to sustain our livelihood and keep us alive, fuel us to do the activities that we need to do to survive.
Mm-hmm.
Life and survival is the purpose of food. But over the last number of decades, especially in our country, the United States, we don't think about food in terms of health and survival anymore.
Mm-hmm.
We think about food in terms of pleasure.
Yeah.
What do I want to eat that's going to give me the most pleasure?
Right.
And more and more and more products are constantly being created through processing that are more and more and more pleasurable. And because of that, we seek more and more and more pleasure with our food. We don't think about what is the best way for me to fuel my ability to survive. What is the best way to keep my health? Because those are not as pleasant as eating some processed food that just, it tastes so good and it's so pleasurable and, oh, I enjoy the experience, right? Think about how often, you know, people, you go, going out to a restaurant is all about an experience, right? You eat food that it tastes so good and it feels good. And but that's not ever how it was meant to be.
Right. Right. And that was a pretty profound statement, because that's kind of like the layer underneath, or maybe that's not the way to refer to it. It's kind of the because there's kind of it's about me, right? It's like, you know, when you were, but you know, 150 years ago, food was looked at as a necessity to feed the family, a sacrifice, right? And you know, everyone enjoyed a good meal, and the mom would sacrifice to create something good to feed the family, but it was, you know, it wasn't about me. And now food is looked at about not to make sure I'm eating correctly, but more that it tastes good. And what does our grocery our food industry do? It preys upon taste. You know, people want, it preys upon the fact that people want pleasure when they eat. Like, you know, the Dorito effect. You know, we've talked about it several times on the podcast, is, you know, eat one, you can't stop eating, right? And I think that's a pretty, you know, and that's what I'm saying. There's so much about this, and food is only a small component of the big picture, right? There's a lot that's happened in the last 150 years that's, it's all connected. And, you know, so there's aspects of this that we really don't cover on our podcast, but you know, food is one of those aspects of how the society looks at food, and how much government's gotten into food is a way, it's a form of control, right? You take the power of your food out of the hands of yourself and you put it in the hands of the food industries, suddenly you are losing control.
Exactly. And we have completely lost control as a society. And you know, we've been noticing increasingly that the attempts to regain that control and the attempts to bring ourselves back to the reality are met with resistance from not just the corporate powers that sell us the food, but even our own governments.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things we were talking about a little bit before the podcast. I was telling you about the documentary that I watched this week called Farmageddon.
Yeah.
And I was doing some research on documentaries related to, like, you know, health foods, raw milk, you know, small farms, things like that. And I found this documentary and I watched it. And that's essentially what it was about, was the small local farmers who are producing foods in a quality return to reality type of way, mm-hmm. producing foods the way they would have been produced 150 years ago, for example. Kind of like a couple of them were Amish, you know, or mm-hmm. Mennonite type farms where they kind of never stopped producing things that way. But a lot of people that do that are met with resistance from our own government. Obviously, the corporate food companies don't like it. They don't want to pay any attention to the small farmers raising food the right way because they want to sell you their processed food. But they don't have any power to stop you, right? Because they're just a separate entity.
Right.
But the government has the power to stop you. And they focused on... This documentary focused on a number of small farmers and co-ops that were raided, shut down, livestock was seized, product was seized by governments for things that they didn't necessarily even do wrong.
Yeah.
And it was extremely interesting.
Yeah.
There was one particular that they focused on. There was some farmers that had sheep, and they were milking the sheep. And I don't know, I've never had sheep milk, right? But I think the main reason that they got the sheep was because, you know, sheep can serve three purposes as livestock. You can get milk from them, you can get meat from them, you can get wool from them.
Right.
Right. So kind of unique in that way.
Right.
But they had these sheep, and then they got raided by the government because, well, first the government told them they needed to turn in their sheep to be seized because they were afraid that the sheep were exposed to mad cow disease.
Right.
And first of all, if you know anything about mad cow disease, there's never been any mad cow disease found in sheep before. So
that they manufactured this. Yeah.
Exactly. So they got notices that you need to let us seize your sheep, and they weren't complying. So finally, the government just did it by force, and they showed up one day. They stole all their sheep, took them, slaughtered them, tested them all for mad cow disease. It all came back negative. They hid the report for 9 years until they sued. These people sued, and they eventually got it released in court. What the results of the report was, all negative. So these sheep had no traces of mad cow disease whatsoever, yet their entire farm of sheep was raided and stolen and slaughtered. Their whole livelihood was slaughtered, and they got paid less than 20% than what they paid for the sheep.
Did they get paid 20% less after the 9 years? Or was it, after that was released in court, or were they paid 20% at the time they took the sheep?
I don't know exactly. I don't remember.
Yeah. I'd be curious because, you know, if you're going to sue to get that report released, I would think you would also utilize that as evidence to sue the government.
Yeah, and they did, and I can't remember what the outcome. I think the outcome was that they lost and they got appealed, or they appealed it, and then it went to a higher court, and then the judge threw it out and refused to hear the case. Because you can't really sue the government and win.
Not easily, no.
You can do it to try to get attention, you know, national attention kind of for your cause, but mm-hmm. no. And there was an example of a co-op where basically somebody would, there was a guy who would organize getting all of this different types of food, you know, raw milk, meats, produce, all that stuff. And they would have a meetup spot every week where they would essentially exchange, right? They prepaid for the products, and then it was kind of like it was delivered to one spot, and then everybody could kind of pick their thing up. And the government got wind of that, and they didn't like it, and so they came and they showed up one day when everyone pulled up, and they were sitting there, and they just stole everything. It was like a whole big trailer load.
And it's usually some of these. I'm going to watch Farmageddon. But are usually some of these cases done at state level or at the federal level?
Usually, most of these were federal level.
Wow.
But it could be either way.
Yeah.
Because most of your agricultural regulations are at the federal level, but then the state has the power to go further steps if they want to. But I think every state has to at least abide by the federal regulations.
Wow. Yeah, I'll definitely have to check that out. I mean, it's just, it puts, I mean, it, you know, think of yourself as the farmer who lost all his sheep. That would not put, I mean, that would, you know, make you look, view the government in a particular light that would not be favorable. Which I think many of America is looking at the government like that these days. But that puts it, that's like a whole nother level, right? I mean, and the government's been exposed as, you know, making choices that are in the best interest of the few and not for Americans. And so their agenda is not to help Americans. It hasn't been for a very long time, you know. And fortunately, I think more Americans are picking up on this, that the government is not your daddy. It's not there to save you. It's there to pretty much hurt you and get as much money out of you as possible.
It's kind of like a parasite.
Yes.
They live off of essentially the people, especially in the United States. The government is by the people, right? Our tax dollars go to fund the government. We allow the government to exist, but then they produce nothing positive. They produce nothing above and beyond what they take from us.
Right.
At best, a highly efficient government is breaking even.
Yes.
We give them tax dollars and they give us services in return that are of equal value to the tax dollars. But in our case, we receive value far, far, far less than what our tax dollars even go to provide.
Yeah, because we give them so much money and they outspend it.
Oh, well, 100%.
I mean, you know, we're what I can't even remember. What are we, 100-some billion in debt? 100-some trillion in debt? I don't know what it is now. It's some astronomical number.
I think it's like almost 40, like in the 30s, 40 maybe trillion. Trillion, you know.
I mean, and it's when you think about that, I mean, you know, if the amount of money, you can't even fathom that, right? You know, it's like you're trying to quantify what $1 trillion is. Well, think about $1 million, right? $1 million is what, 1% of a billion? Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah, so 1% of
a... No, it's a tenth of a percent.
Tenth of a percent.
It's 1,000 million makes a billion.
There you go. A tenth of a percent.
Yeah.
So, and then now, let's take that billion and think about a trillion. I'm like, we're talking astronomical numbers, and then multiply that by 40, you know, if it's 40 trillion. And you know, they've put us in such a bad... So, you think about what we're getting back for our money. I mean, we are getting a crap deal, you know, and the way we live right now, you can almost say it's being held up by a thread, you know, like a facade, like we're tooth and nail trying to avoid an absolute collapse because of the way the government has spent our money, you know?
Yeah. And you know, that goes back to something we talked about a couple months ago about being prepared.
Yeah.
And, you know, you're right. You can't just trust the government. The government may not always be there to help you. The government isn't there to help you, in my opinion. But the government may not even be there at all, necessarily. You never know what could happen. And that's another argument for finding food sources and survival sources that are outside of government control.
Yeah,
that may still be there even if government shuts down, or you know, massive supply chains and stuff.
Well, and that's something that me and you are both slowly moving towards being more independent, less reliable, relying on our resources from other sources.
Exactly, and it's got a dual purpose,
right?
In my case. We can sit here and we can talk about all of the health benefits of sourcing your food from not grocery stores, from local individuals that do it the right way, or even growing it yourself. And there's a health aspect to it, but I would be lying if I said that it wasn't almost equally as important to me from a freedom perspective.
Yeah.
That I can... not be dependent on grocery stores. You know, if they close down or they say I can't come inside, you know, for whatever reason, I still have opportunity.
Well, that kind of goes back to the social credit thing in China.
Exactly.
Right? You know, if you don't maintain your social credit score, they can turn off services to you. One of them being going to, and I don't know if this is true in China, but it's just makes to, it's not a, you know, too far of a leap of logic to say if we were to ever get into a situation where we had to speak and act a certain way and we were monitored for it, grocery stores could be removed from our abilities, you know, and not, if we can detach ourselves. I mean, I don't go to the grocery store very much. I'd say 90% of what I eat is not from a grocery store. You know, I'm going to say that 10%, it'd be a little bit here and there, but, our grocery store budget, has been cut from, what it used to be.
Well, that's a good thing. Yeah. And I think that's positive steps, but you know, like we've talked about before, it's not an overnight thing. It was small steps in this direction.
Yeah.
I would say I've kind of been on this journey for, you know, 4 years, something like that, kind of slowly. I mean, I kind of knew beforehand some of this stuff was going on, but a lot of the things during COVID enlightened me to what we were really facing. And so it kind of got me started on both for the health and for the freedom and just slowly working in this direction.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and, you know, it's something that, and I didn't mean to take us off on a tangent there, but, you know, it was something that, after that show last week, it really got me doing that, you know, like I said, that big overall picture of what we're kind of living in a facade reality.
What is interesting when, you know, you talk about the 10,000 foot view, and it changes things when you try to think about it from that zoomed out of a view, and you try to think about, you know, the entirety of history and then where we are along that line. It feels different. You know, when you look out at where we are and you only think about where we are today, some of the stuff we do makes sense. But then when you take that 10,000 foot view, all of a sudden you realize that, no, a lot of it doesn't really make sense.
Right.
You know? And so it makes you think, if, I don't know, you know, people have different numbers that they use for how long that humans have been around. I believe it's in the thousands of years.
Mm-hmm.
And so whatever you believe, but let's say it's, you know, like 10,000 years and humans have been doing it one way for 9,900 of those years.
Right.
And then 100, they tried something different and it's not going so well. Maybe that should have you think twice about the way we do things.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. It's like, it's kind of like slowly moving, you know, almost like molasses. I don't know. I don't move or moving a mountain or something, but it takes a long time for people to change, right? It takes generations. And you know, we're kind of in an unusual time to where, you know, suddenly this election, for the first election in my lifetime, and probably the first time in much longer than that, that, you know, food is on the, it's an actual political, you know, issue. It's a political issue now because RFK has made it a political issue and he's got the platform to do it. That's kind of a game changer, right? Because, you know, me and you, we're small fries, right? We're, you know, we have our circles around us that, you know, will listen, but we don't have a platform where, you know, we work for the president of the United States. And, you know, a lot of things he says, I agree with.
But I will say this, it starts at the community level, the
it
local
does.
Level.
It does.
Right?
It does.
Because, I mean, there will be people that will listen if the government changes how they tell you should eat, but it's the people around you, the people you know. Like, think about this week, I know there's something that you're looking forward to waiting in the fridge for you when you leave.
Yes.
That would be your raw milk.
Yes.
That I brought you this morning. And I also brought raw milk for a couple other people this morning to try it for the very first time. And I think because of our influence, they wanted to try it.
Mm-hmm.
And so it'll be interesting to see what they think of it. But I will say that it starts to rub off and it starts to change. Has to do with the community aspect, being around people that you know, you like, you trust, you know, you've known for a long time, you know that what they say is trustworthy. And because if we tell people, we know we can't be hypocritical in that we can't say on this podcast, don't trust the government. But then all of a sudden, if we turn around and the government says, drink raw milk, and we say, okay, well, now you can trust the government.
Yeah, I get
because it. Because that is kind of hypocritical. But there's a completely, it's detached from what the government says, is what we believe. If the government says that, great. I'm glad that they're at least saying the right thing, but it doesn't change my trust in them.
No, 100%. And I think it's like, you know, a lot of people cannot look at the government as someone that's going to save them or their daddy or whatever, you know. You have to just rely on your salvation is truth. What is true, right? And then you have to ask the question of, well, what's your source of truth? That opens a whole other door, right? Because a lot of people say, well, I have my truth or you have your truth. And, well, there's no, that, and then it's not truth, right? Can't be two different truths. There's no such thing as my truth. And I hear people say that, I just cringe. I'm like, dude, there's no such thing as my truth. If you understand the definition of truth, there's one truth, right? And you either submit to it or you don't, right? You don't create a version of your truth and then that's your truth, right? Because then that's where you get, well, you're infringing on my truth. And be like, well, that's not mine. And so you can see where it immediately goes awry. You have neighbor against neighbor, you know, city against city, you know, state against state, who all believe different things. And so that's why there's no such thing as my truth. So, but yeah, I mean, it's one of those things that's going to be very important as we go forward, that you don't look at the government as the arbiter of truth.
Yeah. Agreed.
Yeah.
So another thing that we didn't really get to talk about last week because we had the doctor on, but I am embarking on the carnivore diet this month.
Yes.
And I'm now 11 days in.
How are you feeling?
I feel great.
Yeah.
It's been great. I've enjoyed it. It is restrictive, so there are times where you maybe would like to have something a little different.
Now, did you say you gained a pound or you lost a pound?
Gained a pound.
Gained a pound. Okay.
So far, since the beginning of the month.
Okay.
And I scanned and stuff at the beginning, so I'll be able to see at the end what the difference is.
I'm doing kind of a modified carnivore diet. I'm eating steak every day with a half gallon of chocolate milk.
That's pretty close. I mean, the chocolate milk will take you out of it, but
I'm doing a modified version, and I've gained last 6 weeks, I've put on about 12 pounds.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty quick.
Yeah.
What do you think is the catalyst for that?
I started cooking meat at the gym.
Yeah.
That was
just
it.
Getting in extra protein.
It's that one extra meal.
Yeah.
That
but
was
that's
the difference.
All surplus.
Yes.
Calorie surplus then. Protein surplus. And so that's going right on to adding weight.
Yeah. I was sitting stagnant. You know, I was actually starting to lose. And I said, and it was just because I'm here at the gym at the time I usually was eating. And so I went, got steak, and I mean, cook it up. And then now I sat at my desk yesterday and ate about 11 ounces of steak and a half gallon of chocolate milk.
A half gallon?
Yeah.
In one sitting?
One sitting.
Wow. Yeah, that'll do it to you.
Yeah, yeah. So that's made the difference. I'm now at the bench weight. And so I'll be interested.
You almost can't go up anymore. You'll be over your weight class.
Yeah,
now.
I know. I'm going to have to kind of like pull back a little bit. Not as much chocolate milk or raw milk. Now that I have raw milk,
You can make it chocolate milk, though.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Just because you have raw milk. You can still drink.
I found a chocolate additive at Sprouts that doesn't have any of the nasty stuff in it.
You can do that real easy. Do you have cocoa powder?
Yes.
Do you have honey?
Yes.
That's all it takes.
Really?
Oh, and it tastes just like the, you know, regular chocolate milk.
I'll do that.
Yeah. My wife's made it.
So it's cocoa fantastic. Powder and honey.
Yep. That's it. I don't know the exact ratios, but I can ask her.
Yes. Please send me that because anything to clean it up even more.
Yeah.
Because I got off Hershey's syrup and I went to this other stuff. It was so clean. It was cleaner, right? I don't think there's anything really bad in it, but, you know, I will definitely try that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's cool.
Yep. Yeah. So in light of our recent diet changes.
Yes.
I did a little research and found the best diets of 2025 according to registered dietitians. And I thought that would be very interesting for us to walk through.
Okay.
And maybe discuss some of our opinions on these dietitian recommended diets for 2025. So, I believe there are five diets that this article talks about.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of rates them by category, best diets for certain things. And I want to talk a little bit about whether I agree with it or not. And same thing, get Matt's opinion on what he thinks about it. So these dietitians think that the best overall diet is the Mediterranean diet.
Yep.
So, Matt, what do you think about the Mediterranean diet?
Well, of many diets, I think if I wasn't pursuing the goals I'm pursuing, I'd be fine on a Mediterranean diet. I probably wouldn't have as many. I read this and I'm not. It's a lot of, as I'm reading here, a lot of lean meats, healthy fats, no problem with that. Fiber-rich carbs, you know, my opinion on fiber is still kind of out there. And then this diet, because I know with fiber can bind up nutrients that don't allow you to absorb it very well. So, but if I think someone's doing this, they're eating a lot of fatty fish, you know. I'm not a big fan of grains or legumes or seeds, but I think you're very healthy on this. And I as far as many diets, this would be one of my top five.
Yeah, so generally speaking, you're looking at fish as your protein.
Mm-hmm.
You're looking at olive oil mainly as your fat,
which is great.
Some nuts and seeds.
Mm-hmm.
And then it says for your carb, just like whole grains.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't hate it. It's not exactly something that I would recommend for people here around where we are.
Right.
And the reason is because it's for the fish. Because I think around here we have much easier access to quality meats than we do quality fish.
100%.
We are, 1,000 miles away from the nearest ocean? It's very difficult to get, you know, salmon, shrimp that are wild caught. And, you know, what you see in the grocery stores, we've talked about not being able to trust the grocery stores. A lot of stuff is very misleading in the grocery stores about the quality of the fish. And so I would probably encourage people to not make fish the centerpiece of their protein
100%, around here. Yeah.
Unless you are, and it's different. If you're getting if you know for a fact you're getting high quality, you know, wild caught fish from the ocean and it's fresh,
mm-hmm.
or it's either been processed and frozen very quickly, you know, so that it will be fresh when you thaw it. Otherwise, I don't think you should make that a centerpiece of your diet. Now, if you live on the coast and you have access to seafood that's fresh, go for it.
Yeah, 100%. Right?
But otherwise, that's my only qualm about it. I don't like the, I shouldn't say, I don't love the olive oil either as the main fat base.
Mm-hmm.
Because, number one, I prefer animal fats.
Sure.
I think butter, tallow are a little healthier than olive oil. And the thing about olive oil, too, you guys need to watch out for is I think it's somewhere around 80 or 90% of olive oils aren't actually olive oil. They advertise them as olive oil, but they're not. And that's, you ever notice, like I've noticed this, you go in the store and you look at the shelves for olive oil and it'll be like two bottles that are the same size and one's like double or triple the price of the other one.
Right.
And it's like, why is there such a disparity in the price of olive oil? A lot of the cheaper olive oil is not actually olive oil.
Yeah.
It's mostly seed oils.
And, you know, we probably should do a short segment on how do we determine that? Because, you know, outside of the price, they don't say anything that's going to lead you to think it's not olive oil.
Well, that's one of the reasons why I avoid olive oil.
Yeah. Because
I think what I was reading is it was a study, and they just studied a bunch of different olive oils, and they found like 80 or 90% of them were mostly not olive oil.
Wow.
And so, you know, whereas I can confirm with butter that we make ourselves or tallow from our own beef, you know what it is.
Yeah.
You don't have a question. And so if you know for a fact your olive oil source is quality extra virgin olive oil, I think that's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd rather confirm another
way.
Well,
and I agree with that. You know, and I guess the other question is how long will like ghee and tallow last?
A very long time.
That's what I thought.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tallow, if done correctly, there's a process to get it rendered into tallow. But once you get it rendered into tallow, it lasts a very long time.
Yeah.
Butter, on the other hand, not quite as long.
Yeah. No, that's, and I've got a couple jars of ghee and a couple jars of tallow. And I got, there's a some tallow you can buy at Sprouts for like, I think it's like $15. And then I got me another jar of it from the farmer's market, you know, so... you know, and I've cooked in both ghee and tallow, and they have they add a unique particular taste to what you're cooking. I do like cooking my eggs in olive oil because I like the taste olive oil leaves with it, but I cook all my meats in tallow or ghee, you know, depending on what I have most of.
Yeah.
And I've also, the other thing I'm going to be trying is putting ghee in my coffee.
Okay.
You know,
which that was that Dr. Alexander was recommending that?
She was recommending, and actually, my friend Steve, you know, he puts butter in his coffee every morning, and it's helped his digestion. So I thought he was crazy until I heard Dr. Alexander say it. I'm like, oh, butter and coffee? I'm like, anyway. So, yeah, I mean, outside of that, I think that, I mean, you know, it's okay. You know, I'm not going to favor it over what I do, you know. You know.
No, but let me, I will say this. Any diet that cuts out processed food is a step in the right direction.
That's right.
And there's no processed food involved here.
Right.
The hearty whole grains, you need to be kind of careful with the whole grains.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of the whole grains, but.
It depends. But what I will say is if this diet sounds exactly like what would be up your alley, if you... really do your research and confirm your sources of your foods, and which you should always do. But if you do your research, confirm your sources of your foods, and you know you've got high quality on all this stuff, it's not too bad.
Yeah.
You know, it's definitely, if you're just, I have to have this diet, I'm probably not going to tell you that you have to change.
Mm.
As long as you're getting enough protein in,
yep.
You can still accomplish all the health goals that you want, I think.
Well, I'll tell you what I've done a ton of meal plans. I got, I think, I have one more now to do this weekend. And I have a lot of people that like vegetables, right? I don't even put, except for like sweet potatoes and potatoes, I don't even put them on my meal plans. I say, you get these things in, if you want to have vegetables, go ahead. You know, because they're so macro, you know, low that they're not going to mess up the macronutrients very much. So usually if they, you know, and by the time they get in the amount of protein I want to get in, they're not going to eat that much anyway. So I tell them, get in as much leafy greens as you want. But, you know, I don't even put them on there because They're just, you know, hummus. I guess that's a, I forget. Isn't that made with chickpeas? Isn't that made
I think with, so.
Yeah. So I'll put that on there because that's got a mixture of stuff. But, you know, there's some things, but I have a list of leafy greens that I like. These are some leafy greens that if you want them, go for it, you know. But, you know, it's a, you know, that's the thing is like with some of these diets is like, you know, just make sure you're maintaining your muscle mass that you do have. You
know. Speaking of maintaining your muscle mass, the next diet recommended is the flexitarian diet. I'll just say this. It doesn't necessarily live up to its name.
Right.
Because you think flexitarian, you think, man, I'm flexing some big muscles. But here's what you'll eat on the flexitarian diet. Fresh produce, whole grains, legumes, nuts, seeds, and plant-based proteins such as tofu, tempeh, edamame, and jackfruit. Matt, is there something missing on that list?
Red meat. Real red meat. I'm not a fan of plant proteins.
No.
At all.
Huh.
And, you know, one of the things that happens with, you know, plants, you know, is that people don't realize that, or I don't know if they just ignore it, but, you know, oxalates and phytates, and these are all things that are present in foods and legumes. They bind minerals like iron, zinc, and, you know, calcium, so they don't absorb as much in the body. So when you're eating these for their nutrients, you're not getting the complete absorption of them. And, you know, so that's why I don't eat some vegetables, but it's a very small portion of my diet. You know, but if people enjoy them, like I said, go for it. I'm not going to deter you from eating it. It's hard to convince people that, you know, leafy greens aren't really necessary.
Yeah, this sounds a lot like the Mediterranean diet minus the fish and the olive oil, and then putting instead tofu and edamame. But that's definitely a downgrade.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Because the most important pieces are the healthy fats and the proteins, healthy proteins, and you're kind of taking that out here. You're not going to get a whole lot. Well, you're not going to get really any protein from fresh produce, whole grains, a little bit from nuts and seeds. You know, so if all your protein's coming from tofu, I mean,
yeah,
I can just imagine what that person might look like if they're on a diet.
Well, now,
like
you know, don't it does say here on the flexitarian diet, which this is the first I've heard of it. Healthy fats like olive oil and avocado are likely key components with responsibly sourced animal products enjoyed in moderation.
I wonder what they define moderation as, though. Probably like, well, you can have it once a week, you know.
I was going to say maybe once a month, but, you know, because you know how they view...
Yeah, but that should be the base of your diet, is
yes.
That healthy animal products.
100%.
So it's kind of like a vegetarian, and I get it where the name comes from now, flexitarian. It's flexible vegetarian diet is what it sounds like.
Yeah.
Be a vegetarian, but you don't want to be strict on it, so then you're going to have meat every once in a while. But, you know, where are your principles? If you're going to follow a vegetarian diet, follow a vegetarian diet. You know, I follow a vegetarian diet because I want to, you know, not eat meat, but then every once in a while I like a steak, so I can still have one. Well, defeats the purpose.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things I discovered recently, I came across this pamphlet from a doctor, and this pamphlet was anti-dairy. And hardcore anti-dairy, not just pasteurized, but unpasteurized as well. And so I did a little digging into this, and maybe I've talked about this in a past show, but, you know, a lot of the vegetarian push isn't about being a vegetarian. A lot of people eat it for that, but the higher-ups, the big pushes that have money behind them, it's about animal cruelty, you know. Save the animals type thing. So like many of the sources I found, I think I looked at 10 sources, and there's probably 50 on that document. 10 of those sources, 7 of them were animal activists. So I kind of was like, okay.
Yeah, but here's the problem with that. If people understood, consuming milk is not against animal welfare. And here's why. Because the cow that you milk is alive because it's being milked, because it has a utility.
Right.
If you stop milking it, it has no utility. Then it gets slaughtered for meat.
Right.
So if you don't want it milked, then it's going to end up dead as meat. So for these animal welfare people, milking animals and stuff is the best way to keep them alive.
Well, and also to answer the question that people say milk is not for animals, it's for cows.
Or like it's not for humans.
I'm sorry. Yeah, sorry. Not for humans, but for cows. You know, forget the whole idea that it comes from a cow. Does it benefit us? Does it have the nutrients in us that helps our gut? The answer to that question is yes.
You know what I would say to that?
What?
If you don't want us to drink cow's milk because it's from a cow, then you're basically arguing that we should be drinking human's milk.
Yes.
Which I don't think anybody wants to start drinking breast milk. As adults.
No, not as adults. And so just with that in mind, you know, there's so many benefits that have been proven with cow's milk. It has so much, so many, and I'm talking unpasteurized, so let me clarify that. Not the watery milk they sell in the grocery store. But it has such good bacteria, and it will solve many of your gut problems as drinking milk. So, yes, cow's milk is for humans, 100%.
Yep. Okay. Third diet. This one, it says, is the best diet for weight loss. This is the Noom diet. N-O-O-M. Noom diet.
Yeah. So, I mean, it says this is more of a behavioral type of diet.
It is a color-coded food system where you sort your food into different categories based on caloric density. First category, green foods. These are the least calorie dense and or contain the highest concentration of healthy nutrients. Examples include vegetables, fruits, egg whites, tofu, tuna, non-fat milk, and non-fat dairy products, brown rice, quinoa, and oatmeal.
Where's the egg yellows on here?
They're not green foods.
Egg whites are green foods?
Apparently. Highest concentration of healthy nutrients, which is absolutely insane to me that you would say the egg white has a higher concentration of healthier nutrients than the egg yolk.
Well, they're taking
all
out.
Of the nutrients are in the egg yolk.
You know why? Because the yolk has the fat in it.
Exactly. But the fat is where all the nutrients are.
I know. It's, oh my gosh. Yeah. So that's. Yeah. I mean, there's no reason. Here again, even our diets are turned upside down.
Yeah, because, okay, so your green foods, there is nothing on there that has any quality fats in it. Egg whites, no. You know, tuna, no. Vegetables, fruits, no. Non-fat milk, no. Non-fat dairy, no. Brown rice, quinoa, oatmeal, it's all carbs. So there, you're getting basically zero fats.
Zero.
Humans are not going to function well with no quality fats.
Here's the thing that I tell you. All the people I put on or anything that we do, me and you do, as far as when we put people on our meal plans, what's the first thing they say? I feel great. Every time. Why? Because they're off the shitty carbs. Okay? And not only they're off carbs, but they're off American carbs. Our American carbs are really bad. So, you know, the fact that they want to continually push carbs as the main source of energy is crazy to me.
Yeah. So then the second category is yellow foods, which is kind of like green means go, yellow means caution type of thing. So,
okay, you know, should be good. Oh, ground beef.
Yeah. Matt read ahead a little bit. Yellow foods are avocado, salmon, lean ground beef, black beans, olives, hummus, and low fat dairy products. So we got to be very careful having our ground beef, Matt. You might only want
to. Man, I am abusing the crap out of that. I am in yellow all the time.
Wait till you see what orange is.
Oh, no. I won't even read ahead. I'll let you tell me.
The orange category, which is you should rarely, if never, have boy. These foods. Full-fat dairy products. Nut and seed butters and red meats.
I'm surprised they didn't call it the red foods.
It's too offensive.
Okay. Probably. Well, I'm offended that it's in the orange. Because all right, now, seed butters?
I don't really understand that one. Huh? I guess like peanut butter?
Okay.
Nut butters, seed butters? Like,
I guess. Or it says nut and seed butter, so I guess that's like peanut butter. I don't know. But yeah, red meat. Well, wait a second. I thought it had ground beef. So it doesn't consider ground beef red meats?
Apparently not. I don't know. That's on the yellow, but
yeah,
orange is red meat, full fat dairy. And I'm sure egg yolks would be here if they had to. And then you have 99% of my diet in the orange foods category this month.
Here's my grade for the gnome diet. It's an F.
Yeah, we don't recommend following.
No, do not follow this diet. That is
Actually, what you could do is just the inverse gnome diet, and you just flip the colors.
Yeah, well, I can't believe they don't have. Why didn't they have the yellow oaks in the orange foods?
The
yolk of the egg in the orange.
They just didn't even mention the yolk of the egg.
Anyway. They don't even want you. That's like off the charts bad for you. That's crazy.
It's so bad you can't. It's like it's double red.
Man, anyone that's I'd never even looked into the gnome weight loss program. I've never looked into it. So if I know anyone who's on this, I'll be like, get your butt off of it. But
yeah, I hadn't heard of it, but Matt, it is recommended by dietitians.
So that's what tells you the quality of the dietitians.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, and also it's good housekeeping. You know, they have an agenda as well. So they're going to get the dietitians that match their belief systems.
Well, they are educated on an agenda. Just yes. Like Dr. Alexander talked about last week in her education, how she realized after getting out of school how the education did not necessarily match the truth.
Right.
And having to unlearn a lot of stuff and relearn with the right context. And it's a similar thing for dietitians.
Yes. Yes.
So we move on next to the DASH diet. And this diet is supposed to be really heart healthy.
Oh, boy.
So, the DASH diet, here's what you will eat. Whole grains, low-fat or fat-free dairy, fish, poultry, beans, and nuts.
Again, no red meat.
No red meat at
all. You notice a trend here?
Yep.
There's a trend that this magazine has made sure there's no diet on here that includes dairy and red meat.
Pretty much, because you can have low fat or fat free dairy, right? I wonder.
Which mean pasteurized.
Well, I mean, can
you do low fat unpasteurized? Can you do it by yourself?
Yeah, you just take the cream off.
Well, that's no fun. I mean, yeah, you take the cream off, but it's still raw milk.
Yeah, it's raw, but the fat is in the cream.
Well, then what is the what? I mean. Okay, so when you supposedly get whole milk, is that whole milk supposed to have the cream in it?
It has a little bit of it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it can be nothing like the raw milk we get where it's got, you know, two inches or 3 inches of cream on it.
Uh-uh.
Okay.
No. It's
in my book, that's
whole milk has less cream than just a straight, like, raw milk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's not even whole milk.
Well, yeah, they advertise it as whole milk, but it's actually not.
Right.
But think about the first thing they list. They list whole grains as the first thing. And then low-fat, dairy, fish, poultry, beans, and nuts. This one's very similar to Mediterranean.
Right.
It just allows a little bit of dairy and some poultry, which this is the first diet we've seen with poultry, which is like chicken and duck and things like that.
But no red meat.
Nope. No red meat.
Or it's not in the orange category.
Okay. I believe this is the last one. The Mind Diet is called... Yep. The Mind Diet, rated best for brain health. So before I go any further, I want to make a comment. I haven't read ahead. If it's best for brain health, it should be very, very high in healthy fats.
Yes.
Because healthy fats help power the brain.
Yeah, cholesterol.
Right? Yep, should be high in cholesterol, saturated fats.
Yep.
Let's see if that comes true. So, the Mind Diet. Here's what we're going to be eating on the Mind Diet. Oh, boy. Berries. Beans. Walnuts. Leafy greens, whole grains, seafood, olive oil, and plenty of vegetables.
That's an F.
Yeah. I mean, you know, your seafood, you're going to get some healthy fats from. Olive oil is okay, but boy, I mean, there's not much else in there. You're going to have to be eating a lot of fish.
A lot of fish.
Walnuts, huh?
Yeah, this is, again, this is a negative.
But, Matt, you need to eat your whole grain so that your brain's healthy.
Negative. I think this is more of a list. I'd say four of these at least four of these are diets that should not be taken or not be practiced. Will you lose weight on them? Yes. But you know what else you're going to lose? Tons of muscle mass.
Yeah.
Okay.
Not necessarily the right kind of weight.
That's right. That's what a lot of people think, that they do these diets, and I've lost so much weight, but they lose so much muscle mass, and muscle mass is the precursor to fight disease. They've associated the more muscle mass you have, the greater chance of you will fight disease off. You will fight sickness off. So, and what does it do? It allows you to be more functional late in life. So muscle mass is an absolute equation for later in life. And so none of these do that. You know, they don't talk about, you know, high protein or any of that, because then they're worried about the kidneys. Talk to me a little bit about this. I've been hearing this a little bit more often. People come in, I tell them what kind of protein they're taking. The first thing they say is, oh, but your kidneys, can they handle that much protein? And I'd be like, well, my kidneys are damaged and I have 250 grams of protein a day. It's like, I don't seem to have any problems. So that's kind of more of a recent thing that people are worried about high protein, and that you shouldn't, the kidneys can't handle high protein.
I guess I would, the one caveat I would probably give is it does depend a little bit on the type of protein.
Mm-hmm.
I would think that your processed proteins, your protein powders and things would be harder on the kidneys than, just real actual food.
Right.
But I would also say this, if high protein diet that's from red meats, eggs, dairy, if that's where most of your protein comes from, the human body was created by God and has not necessarily evolved, but has maybe had some minor changes in the time on this earth. But if it could handle that for the first 9,900 years that we were here, going back to the example from earlier, why couldn't the kidneys handle it now?
Yeah.
And so that would be my argument to it. I don't know the science behind it, and I can't necessarily comment on the exact science behind it, but I see no reason why the kidneys wouldn't be able to handle protein from whole natural foods that we've been eating for thousands of years. All of a sudden, the human body jumped, you know, a millennia in evolution to all of a sudden not be able, the kidneys not to be able to handle
right.
this type of protein. It doesn't make sense to me. Right. However, if protein is an issue and you're consuming a very large amount of processed protein powders and protein shakes and things, maybe that might be a problem, because protein powders are a recent invention, right? Just
right.
a couple decades old, probably.
Yeah, yeah.
And so that would be my comment on it, is get as much of your protein as you can from whole natural foods, and you know, you're more than likely to be okay, because people have been for 10,000 years.
Yeah. And protein, you know, is not cheap.
It's not.
And I know that
I have people and I tell them how much protein they need to be eating. They're kind of like, I could see dollar signs in their eyes. And I say, well, okay, let me give you one that our good friend Brian Kelleher gave me. And that's the raw protein, which is just raw protein. It's just, that's all whey protein.
Whey protein powder. Right. No additional additives.
Nothing. There's nothing else
in
there.
It's unflavored.
Unflavored, yes. And I've been using that since that show. So it's been several months.
And I believe I looked it up. It's about $1 per serving.
Yeah, so you get like 90 servings in there. It's about $85, something like that. Now, I usually put more than one serving in there, but yeah, it's that, because I know a lot of people, when I show them that price, are like, oh my gosh. I said, yeah, but you get 90 servings. And so then it makes it more, you know, economical when they see that.
I'm set out on a goal this month, so I'll give a little bit of a preview, not necessarily a spoiler, but a preview. So I've been tracking all of my food this month on Carnivore Diet. I normally don't track my food. I just got to the point where I don't really need to. We've talked about intuitive eating a little bit, and just I kind of just know, but I decided I would still track it for informational purposes and statistical purposes. But one of the things I've been tracking along the way too is the cost the total cost of the food that I've been eating this month.
Wow, that's going
to
be interesting.
My goal is to set out to prove that it's not that expensive, not as expensive as what everyone thinks.
I'll be very interested in seeing that. Yeah.
So I will say that, you know, I'm not going to the grocery store for really any of my food this month. So it's, you know, not necessarily that you can eat this way in the grocery store, but, you know, it can be done.
Well, just in my little experiment, I buy in about 3 pounds of steak a week. It lasts me a week. That's about $40.
Mm.
So, and it's this top sirloin filet.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not the best quality meat, but I'm not looking for filet mignon.
Yeah.
You know, I'm looking for the protein, right? Mm-hmm. So I'm looking for an economical steak, and that's been costing about $40, you know. That's just been, you know, like I said, I've only been doing this for about 6 weeks, and which has allowed me to, you know, gain the weight I need to gain and feel a lot stronger. So now you think about, well, you know, now I'm eating, you know, a decent portion each time. And sometimes I'll eat like 11 ounces. Sometimes I'll eat like, you know, 6 ounces, you know. So but it's been lasting, you know, 3 pounds has been lasting about 5 days.
Yeah, that'll get you through the week. That's not bad. And I won't give any comments on mine. Just don't want to spoil it.
We're gonna
talk about it.
I'll be anticipating that show
at the end of January.
Yeah.
So, any more comments on these diets, Matt?
Yeah. So my conclusion on these diets is to, I would rename the title. Okay. So the title right now is the best 5 diets of 2025 according to registered dietitians. And I would say the 5 worst diets for 2025, according to these dietitians. And the best of the worst is going to be the Mediterranean.
I would agree with that. I think, here, let's do this real quick. You kind of threw out some grades, but let's go through, and we're both going to grade each of these.
Okay,
that'd
be fun, yeah.
How about that?
So we'll
start with the Mediterranean. You use the traditional American grading system, A through F, pluses and minuses.
Okay, yeah, yep, yep. All right, you want me to go first?
Sure, go first on the Mediterranean.
I'll give the Mediterranean a C+.
Okay, I was going to go straight C.
Yeah.
But that's about right where it falls in, right? Which is, it's an average. There's a lot of room for improvement there, but you're not failing.
No, you're not failing. I mean, it's got some merit.
I agree. So, second diet was the flexitarian diet.
Okay. Well, because this allows for responsibly sourced animal products to enjoy in moderation, I'll give it a D.
a D. I'm going F.
Oh, wow.
Define moderation. Because even if you can have a steak a week, doesn't make it any better than
I gave
not
it. I'm trying to be kind. Man, you are too kind to these
dietitians.
Yes,
I gave F it on the flexitarian diet. We would not be doing much flexing on the flexitarian
diet.
I'll
go down to a D minus just because it allows you to have some meat.
Yeah, that does bring it up a little bit. But yeah. The Noom diet, that's the color-coded diet. Green, yellow,
now,
orange.
What's funny is that the flexitarian makes me laugh, right? Like, what the hell are we talking about here? And then the Noom diet, which I've heard a lot of people talk about. You know, I haven't heard anyone recently talk about that, but I had heard other people at when we were at 100 talk about the Noom diet. I didn't know much about it because I'd never looked into it, right? But now reading about this, tuna. I give it a D+.
A D plus. Interesting. I'm gonna have to think about this one a little bit. It does allow for more protein than the flexitarian diet.
Mm-hmm.
At least you can, like you said, have tuna.
Well, at least that's what we perceive.
Egg whites.
Right.
Well, they're green foods, so you can have them. So your protein's going to be better. It's just your fats aren't going to be there.
Right.
So I'm going to give it a D.
Okay.
Yeah, just a regular D.
So the last one you gave an F, I gave a D minus. This one you gave it a D, I'm giving a D plus.
Oh, so I'm just a little more critical.
Yeah, you are.
The DASH diet next. DASH diet, that one was whole grains, produce, low fat, dairy, fish, poultry, beans, and nuts.
Well, it improved because it put the chicken in there.
It did. Poultry, yeah.
Yeah. So
fish and poultry.
I give that a C minus.
Okay, I'm going to go on this one. I'm actually going to go a C plus.
Okay.
And here's why. Because after reviewing it, I think I'm going to go, I think it's better than the Mediterranean. And because it's basically the same, but it allows for some dairy and it does allow for poultry. So you can get more protein and you get a little bit more fat in the dairy. So I had a C on the Mediterranean. I'm going to go C plus here. I think I almost might recommend DASH over Mediterranean now that I've looked at it a little closer.
What did I just give it?
C minus, right?
Yeah, C minus.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to I could go to C, but I'd say C minus C. I'll stick with the C minus.
Okay, last one, Mind diet. The Mind diet. This was the one that was berries, beans, walnuts, leafy greens, whole grains, seafood, olive oil, and vegetables.
I'm going to give it an F.
Well, why an F?
Because I don't want to be eating seafood all day long. There's no red meat. There's no poultry. There's no dairy. It's an F.
Yeah, I'm not going to go full F. You know, you got the seafood, kind of like you do in the Mediterranean diet, but I'm going to go D minus. Like, it's not as bad as the flexitarian, but, you know, it's close. So
yeah.
I'd go D minus on this one. But in summary, I would say nothing on either of our scales scored above a C plus.
No.
So what we have to remember here is, I mean, these are some okay diets at best, but.
So I gave the Mediterranean a C plus, and you gave the DASH a C plus, right?
Yes.
Okay.
So, Matt, what would you grade the carnivore diet? Meat, eggs, dairy. Only.
I'd say A.
Yeah.
Close to an A plus, but an A.
I would kind of agree with that because I do think there are some foods that are good to be added in addition to those foods.
Yeah.
So it's not the perfect diet, but I think it's a lot closer than these others.
What about the lion's diet?
Just red meat only?
Just red meat.
I would probably go A minus.
Yeah.
I mean, you're still getting a pretty similar nutrient profile as long as you eat the right kinds of red meats.
Yeah.
But eggs, it's really hard for me to pull eggs and raw dairy out because raw dairy for the gut health benefits, and eggs because high quality egg yolks, there's just nothing more nutritionally dense.
Yeah.
Than those. And
they took them off of all of these.
And there's a lot of research. I haven't looked into it real deep, so I don't want to comment on it a whole lot, but there's a lot of research that there are nutrients compounds found in egg yolks that have found lots of healing, healing qualities. And so I think there's something else there with egg yolks. I eat a lot of them. My wife eats a lot of them. Our son, that's one of the things about our son. So kids are not really supposed to eat egg whites. I don't really know why. But so one of the things when he started eating solid food that we would feed him is egg yolks. He throw, you know, put just the yolk in the pan, heat it up, leave it still runny. My gosh, he eats those things up.
Really?
Like two egg yolks a day, right? Wow. For the past couple months. He loves his egg yolks. And it made me think, I mean, it's got to be something to that.
Yeah.
If kids, you know, because he's always ever had until started eating solid food was breast milk. And so he's got one of the most, probably the most pure guts, you know, just he hasn't, his taste buds haven't been imposed by all these other foods like ours have. And he loves egg yolks. So it makes me think there's got to be a reason behind that. I think egg yolks are very good for you, especially runny.
Yeah.
Right. You can eat scrambled eggs sometimes and stuff or boiled eggs, but as much as I can, I love just a nice, like, you know, over easy egg where the yolk's still nice and runny.
Yeah.
Oh, it's
I love that.
Tremendous.
I thought of a new name for this article. The best diets for 2025 to get dementia.
To get dementia.
or Alzheimer's, one of the two, because they're so low in cholesterol.
Yeah, well, in summary, we don't recommend any of these diets for you guys.
No, these are good housekeeping fail.
Yeah.
You know, by Stefan Sassos. Stephanie Sassos. Yeah, that's a fail.
Yeah, and it doesn't really say, it may, I'm not going to read into it that much, but where they got their dietitians from. Because, you know, you can find dietitians that will say anything.
Anything.
So, you know, I could go find a dietitian that doesn't recommend these.
Yeah.
You know, these do. So it doesn't really mean anything, right? We live in a world now where titles give you credibility, but people are finding that it doesn't really mean anything. Like, we had Dr. Alexander on last week, and she said all the things she said, and we agree with a large majority of it. But we could also find a doctor that's a doctor and have them on, and they could say everything we disagree with.
Right.
And so does the title, does the certification really mean anything anymore? Not necessarily.
Well, I'll give my final Lion's Diet. I give it a barely, I'm going to give it an A-, but barely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it would be interesting that the main purpose that I've heard for people using the Lion's Diet is in the course of an elimination diet.
Mm-hmm.
That is, if you just have, you know, a wrecked gut, you're in poor health, you know, it's probably diet related. Your diet's been very terrible. One of the easiest way to just get a fresh restart is go down to the Lion's Diet and only eat red meat, and then slowly begin adding other foods back in. And you can then kind of see what is affecting you and how it's affecting you. You add a food back in and, you know, one of your ailments comes back or you start having issues, then you know what's causing it.
Right.
And so it's kind of a short-term thing. I don't really think it's a good long-term thing. Just like I don't necessarily think the carnivore diet is a great long-term forever diet either. Mm-hmm. I know people would disagree with me, but short-term, I think it's good.
Yeah. I agree with that.
You know what we should do, Matt? We should spend some time, and obviously it's different for everybody, and we can kind of talk about some of maybe the different conditions, but I think we should each spend some time coming up with our perceived perfect diet.
Mm.
And then I think we should talk about them and compare.
Okay.
On the podcast.
We can do that.
So at some point, maybe not next week, but at some point I think we should do that. And we haven't really, we've talked about what to do, what not to do, but what if you had to design the perfect diet?
Yeah, I want to give that some thought.
And we could say just like for ourselves.
Yeah, yeah, maybe, yeah.
Because different people, we recommend tweaking different things.
Well, I mean, so. My diet would look very similar to yours when I start cutting.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. So, I mean, I wouldn't want to eat like I'm eating now for a long time. I'll probably eat like this for a while just because it prepares me.
When are you going to start cutting?
After probably, I need to look at that. I was looking at the meets this year that I want to enter, and they're only going 3 months out, so I don't know what the ones in the summer are yet. So there's one in this month. There's one in February. The one in February I'm interested in because it counts for nationals. So I'm interested in that one. So, and I'm peaking at my weight. I'm peaking in my strength. So as long as I can keep my nicks and pulls to a minimum, and everything's kind of lining up for the early part of this year. So.
Well, cool. That's exciting. We will be following that journey as you continue on it.
Did we say anything about our cheese picks?
We did not. We don't have picks this coming week.
No, I meant last week.
Well, last week, Matt made up a game on me.
That's right.
Matt is now tied. That's right. Tied going into the playoffs.
And that's why I wanted to bring it up.
Yeah. So I will say, I'm not using it as an excuse because I did predict a win when they did not win, but I did predict a win based on the premise that only Mahomes and Kelce and Jones would be out, and then they decided to sit 17 of their starters.
Yeah.
I may have thought differently
if I
knew that. But yeah. Matt did catch me, so going into the playoffs, we're going to see what happens. We're neck and neck.
Neck and neck, man. Neck and neck. I don't even know what our totals are.
I don't know. I just knew.
I think you have two losses, and I have two losses.
Yeah, the two times that the Chiefs lost were my only two losses.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, so we'll find out who they're going to be playing here before long.
That's right. Next week we'll make our official playoff predictions for them in their first game. They've got a bye this week. They are on rest. So, well, Matt, this was episode number 48.
Yes. It's a great episode.
Yep, it was a really good episode. Just me and Matt, but we hope to welcome on some more guests here coming up. We've got a couple in the pipeline that we are planning to have on, so at some point be looking forward to that. Some great guests, including one of our other trainers here at Anytime Fitness that we have yet to have on.
Yep.
And also happens to be a pro bodybuilder. Yes. So,
yeah.
Yep.
That'll be interesting because
we'll be.
You know, Trisha has a different viewpoint on nutrition, and but it'll be interesting to hear her journey. She has a very interesting story of how she got from where she is to where she is now. So that'll be interesting to go over.
Absolutely. Well, thank you guys for joining us for this 48th episode of the Loading the Bar podcast, and we will be back with you guys next week for another episode.
All right. Take care, guys.
Hey, look at you. You've completed another milestone by finishing this episode of Loading the Bar. Your future self thanks you profusely. Loading the Bar is podcasted from Lee Summit, Missouri. Email us at cpt.kansascity@gmail.com. Forge ahead and share your progress. And we'll see you back here for another episode of Loading the Bar.